Hello and welcome to our program Fortune, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Hannah Kapasi, and during the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the February-March issue of Fortune magazine here on OWL Radio. Welcome back, everyone. Today I have an issue focused on crypto and VCs, so kind of on trend, I think. And I'm going to start off this episode with the foreword by the editor-in-chief. Do you believe the crypto hype? One summer morning in 2014, I had an eye-opening breakfast with the prominent startup investor, Jeremy Liu. The even-keeled and ever-fashionable partner at venture capital firm Lightspeed had by then developed a reputation for spotting trends early. Liu was the first institutional investor to put money into Snapchat, betting on the app when it still had fewer than 100,000 users. It now has nearly 300 million globally. As we sat down that day at the Battery, a trendy members-only club in San Francisco, I asked Liu about his latest fascination, Bitcoin, then trading below $500. What do you make of it? Is it just hype? I asked. Liu paused, then gave a measured response. Cryptocurrencies and the blockchain technologies that powered them, he explained, were here to stay. Would Bitcoin continue to be the dominant digital currency? That remained to be seen. He made a suggestion. If I had enough disposable income, Liu said, I should pour 1% of my savings into Bitcoin. If it went to zero, I wouldn't be crushed. If it went to the moon, I'd be thrilled. Fortunately, I followed Liu's advice, and unfortunately, I sold most of my small Bitcoin stash a few years later when the price doubled. Liu and Lightspeed went on to lead the first funding round into blockchain.com and to invest in many other crypto names. Since then, Bitcoin has skyrocketed, then plummeted, then skyrocketed some more, and more recently, tumbled again. And per Liu's prediction, there's no shortage of rival currencies that have launched in its wake. Crypto has now become the hottest investment sector in the world. It is just as fascinating to the Reddit-devouring day trader as it is to Silicon Valley. In 2021, venture capital funds globally sank $30 billion into crypto investments per pitch book, with $7 billion of that coming from the U.S. That's more than every previous year of crypto investing combined. And it appears the sector will only get more frenzied this year. Andreessen Horowitz, one of the most influential investors in the space, raised a $2.2 billion crypto fund back in June. And in December, one of the fund's partners, Katie Hahn, announced she was departing to create a huge crypto fund of her own. For this issue's cover story, Fortune's Michael Levram landed an exclusive sit-down with Hahn about what led her to Andreessen's departure, what led to her Andreessen departure, and how she plans to mobilize the new $1 billion fund she's raising to invest in the red-hot space. Is Hahn, a one-time powerhouse prosecutor-turned-VC, daunted by the prospect of launching her own venture firm focused on an industry as volatile as crypto? Not so much. As she tells Fortune, the nature of running a crypto fund is taking on risk. Wall Street, meanwhile, is buzzing about another trend sweeping through the valley, the metaverse. The bulls, from Mark Zuckerberg to Goldman Sachs, see it as a multi-trillion dollar opportunity. For more on why, read Bernhard Warner's trenchant exploration of all things meta in this issue. As with Bitcoin, when pondering an investment in the metaverse, it's good to remember Liu's wise advice. Don't get scared off by the hype, but don't get too carried away with it either. That's by Editor-in-Chief Allison Chantel. So maybe we'll encourage you to venture into the space. All right, so the next article is the conversation piece, and this time it is with Falguni Nair, and this is by Emma Hinchcliffe. In 2012, investment banker Nair noticed an under-addressed market in India, beauty. She founded e-commerce platform Nika just in time to harness the nation's broadband revolution and in November became a billionaire seven times over when the now profitable company IPO'd with a valuation of $13 billion. We sit down with the first Indian woman to take a unicorn public. What inspired you to start Nika? Nair says, I was a long-time investment banker, and I took a lot of companies public in India. I met a lot of entrepreneurs, and I saw their passion and belief in their ideas. That really inspired me to set up a business of my own against a popular belief about the viability of beauty e-commerce at the time. Beauty was extremely successful in the West and in Asia. In India, I didn't see that. I believed there would be demand for beauty, but it wasn't a nascent industry. Why had the category not taken off in India? She responds, India did not have department stores. There were reasons why physical retail was difficult to do in as geographically diverse a country as India. Beauty is a long-tail industry in the sense that there are a lot of products, which means the retailer would have to stock a lot of products to give consumers a real choice. Go to Sephora or Ulta, there's so much choice. That was hard to provide in a diverse country like India on a mass scale in physical retail. In e-commerce, we kept all the inventory in one or two warehouses in the beginning. We could service the whole of the country from those warehouses. We entered the market in 2012. By 2015, there was broadband revolution in the country, and broadband became available and very cheap. We benefited from that, and we were at the forefront of a category others had ignored. What did it take to change the beauty habits of Indian consumers? In India, the beauty consumer used five products, including kajal, a traditional form of eyeliner, and lipstick, and that's it. I would travel all over the world and see so many products, like eye creams or primers. The Indian consumer didn't know what primer was. So Nika did a lot of education. We used social media as a platform to educate our customers. We created blogs and community platforms that helped us get customers excited about the industry. We realized that authenticity and trust in the fact that products are safe and high quality and branded is important. In phase two, we started going global in search of great brands. We brought some of the best global brands into India by educating them on the potential of the Indian market. We won the K-beauty Korean skincare brands like The Face Shop and then brands like Huda Beauty or Charlotte Tilbury. With social media networks, all consumers are global, and we brought global products and trends to the consumer. What lessons did you take from IPOs you worked with as a banker to help navigate your own? Communication, working with investors, and transparency in reporting. Explaining the business model in a very transparent manner is important so that the financial results are not mumbo jumbo. You don't want to lean on any one stakeholder, be it investor-centric or only employee-centric or consumer-centric. You have to balance all stakeholders. Your share price has fallen since the initial excitement around the IPO. Why do you think that is? The beauty industry does have some seasonality. Q4 is the best quarter because it's very festive. It has Indian festivals and Christmas and New Year's. And in COVID times, consumption of certain types of products like lipsticks have gone down. But some categories have done very well, like skin and hair. How would you sell the future of the company to investors? We've been a business-to-consumer company, but now we're entering the B2B space where we sell to retailers. 3 years ago, we introduced fashion and we've seen a huge growth. And within fashion, we're expanding into wider categories like men's and kids. Within beauty, we're expanding to further men's categories. On an international perspective, we're making small, small baby steps. We now have offices in London that will start with import and export. We do believe there are many interesting markets. We've already entered Mauritius and many small markets, but the Middle East and Europe are most promising. What are the opportunities and challenges in fashion versus beauty? Beauty is a bigger business for us at the moment, but if we fast forward 5 years, I think fashion will grow very fast. The fashion industry in India is five times the size of beauty. And the customer is much the same. We've built a platform that focuses on bringing fashion-forward styles to customers rather than trying to bring them a piece at the lowest possible price. Some of the Indian industry, because there are a large number of consumers who are price sensitive, has a tendency to focus only on price to get to scale. We felt that there was a need to create a platform that was a little more premium. We want to be a lifestyle retailer. 2021 was a breakthrough year for women-led businesses. In the US, the market debuts of companies Bumble and 23andMe made founders Whitney Wolf Herd and Annie Wojcicki billionaires. Nika's IPO made you the most successful female self-made billionaire in India. Why do you think women are achieving these milestones now? It's like a wave. When the waves form first in the sea, you don't see a big impact. And by the time they reach the shore, you see a big impact, right? What I achieved in 2021 was culmination of the determination I had in 2012 to say, I want to do this, I want to bet the family capital on a business. Women don't want to bet the family capital on business. Men are always starting new businesses and taking the availability of family capital for granted, whereas women don't want to impose. You started Nika at age 49. How did coming in with life experience affect your approach? I was not afraid to be different. When I started the business, people said, "Why beauty? If you want to do e-commerce, you should do electronics or fashion." But I wanted to do beauty. I stuck to it. Then people said, "Oh, you're raising such a small amount of money." They thought the business was not valuable because I wasn't raising billions of dollars from global investors. But I did what was right from a business perspective at every step of the way. That confidence came from many years of having operated in a business environment, especially in a very regulated industry like banking and stockbroking, where I knew that there are no shortcuts. You have to do things right. Do you think Nika's IPO has helped the world recognize the potential of the Indian tech market? Absolutely. Technology platforms in India are some of the best in the world. Within 1 or 2 years of a business, I knew that I wanted to survive and compete with Amazon. My tech platform needed to be as good as Amazon and Flipkart. Otherwise, there was no hope of survival. No one was going to give us a discount. No one was going to say, "Oh yeah, from Nika we'll accept a much poorer quality service." A lot of domestic platforms are even better because they come from an Indian perspective. We have a lot of tech talent in the country which is able to build those platforms in a very cost-effective way. We've always had a very attractive market because of our population and rising incomes. What advice would you give to entrepreneurs in India? You can be a generalist who can learn anything rather than being a specialist and boxing yourself in. When I started Nika, I knew some aspects of the business like sales, marketing, and legal, but I didn't know technology. I did not know retail, and I did not know beauty, and I gave myself a chance. I thought that was a cool story to share about a female entrepreneur taking a chance. It's also nice to hear an older woman doing this. I think you hear a lot about young women in their 20s, which is amazing, but it's nice to hear about someone, I think, that changed careers later in life. All right, the next article is going to be also about another powerhouse woman. This is by Michael Levram, and this is the article that is featured on the cover of this magazine. It's titled Crypto's New Kingmaker. After co-leading three massive funds at Andreessen Horowitz, Katie Hahn is raising $1 billion war chest and striking out on her own. Her new firm is launching into a Web3 world awash in competition, volatility, and just maybe unprecedented opportunity. Katie Hahn is walking me through her art collection. Conveniently, the tour doesn't require schlepping to a gallery or even her house. Hahn's preferred medium is NFT, so we are browsing the full category of digital images on her phone. These digital collectibles, the initials stand for non-fungible token, are stored on the blockchain much the way that cryptocurrencies are, and are currently the hot thing in Hahn's corner of the tech industry. She scrolls through lush floral images and edgier cyberpunk-inspired avatars in search of one of her favorites. While some of the buzziest pieces on the explosive NFT market have sold for tens of millions, this one, A pixelated graphic of a girl with hot pink pigtails didn't cost her a penny. It was a birthday gift. She received it late last year from her friend Elena Dixon. Dixon, it's worth noting, is also the wife of Andreessen Horowitz's Chris Dixon, who has been Han's partner in the firm's crypto fund since she left a job at the Justice Department to plunge into the world of venture capital. But while the pink-haired girl may be carved into blockchain forever, the connections between actual humans are more malleable. Case in point, the reason I'm here with Han is to talk about the bombshell announcement that she's leaving Dixon and the rest of the mighty Andreessen pack to follow her own fund. I'm sorry, to launch her own fund. While the average American might not know Han, she's become an unexpected rock star in the crypto and in the wider world of Web3, which encompasses not just NFTs and currencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum, but also the underlying blockchain infrastructure that supports them. She arrived on the scene in 2013 as anything but a crypto fangirl. In fact, she was a San Francisco-based federal prosecutor tasked with investigating how the technology was being used in criminal activity. "I didn't choose the assignment," says Han, whose prior legal work also included prosecuting white-collar criminals, prison gangs, and corrupt federal agents. "However, I did choose to stay in the space." That choice came in the form of an invitation from Andreessen Horowitz, also known as A16Z, one of Silicon Valley's largest and most well-known venture capital firms. A16Z's founders, Mark Andreessen and Ben Horowitz, were early believers in Web3 back when many VCs were still skittish about investing in crypto. They saw in Han the kind of expertise they needed, but that very few had. The ability to navigate the complicated regulatory landscape evolving alongside the then-fledgling crypto industry. The former prosecutor signed on as the firm's first female investing partner. Along with A16Z's partner, Dixon, she co-founded and co-led a dedicated crypto team of about 50 people, whose last fund totaled an impressive $2.2 billion. Before long, the former industry outsider had become one of A16Z's most high-profile partners, making investments in buzzy companies like crypto exchange Coinbase and NFT marketplace OpenSea. Her mid-December announcement that she was leaving A16Z to build an entirely new firm sent volleys of text messages, congratulations, exclamations, questions around Silicon Valley. It's a big deal, made even bigger by the fact that that sources say Han is targeting a $1 billion fund, which, if she succeeds, would be the biggest crypto fund ever raised by a solo female VC. "There aren't that many women in crypto," says Amy Wu, head of FTX Ventures, who herself was just brought in to invest in a $2 billion fund the crypto exchange launched in January. "Indeed, there aren't many women writing venture checks at all. Female VCs hold just 15.4% of general partner positions in the U.S. Now the former prosecutor is on the precipice of a new challenge. She leaves her 4 years at A16Z with a soaring profile, a wealth of connections, and a strong investing track record. But she also leaves behind the 300-plus person firms, deep pockets, enviable resources, and prestige. Han and her scrappy six-person team offer founders a very different proposition. Her new firm is launching into a world that toggles between headlong gold rushes and stomach-turning corrections, like the one we're in now. Will Han 2.0 have what it takes to get to survive that volatility and get founders to sign on the dotted line? Han and I first sit down on a crisp January day at the Rosewood Hotel in Menlo Park, just steps away from her old office at A16Z. We're seated on an outdoor patio, a majestic view of the Santa Cruz Mountains before us. We're among the only patrons at the normally bustling hotel, a convenient meeting spot for the many venture capitalists who work in the area. It makes sense. Omicron cases are surging in the Bay Area and elsewhere. But even if the place were as VC-packed as it usually is, Han would stand out. She's got blonde hair and piercing blue eyes, and I've never seen her wear anything an Arc'teryx or Patagonia logo, the signature pseudo-casual brands of choice for the Sandhill Road set. Today, Han has arrived in a black and white polka dot dress. The last time I saw her, it was pale pink belted Valentino ensemble. Han is polished, but not reserved. She's got that hard-to-pin-down quality of being able to speak to anyone, be it in a boardroom or a courtroom. She can be persuasive and persistent, but she's also disarming, talking about her new firm with excitement, giddiness even. Sources close to her new venture say Han is raising at least $1 billion for her inaugural fund. Han won't confirm the figure, saying she's prohibited from commenting for legal and regulatory reasons. A standard response from VCs raising funds and wary of provoking the ire of the SEC. But given the money gushing into crypto, a $1 billion seems like a doable and even conservative figure. According to recent data from PitchBook, venture funding in the US hit a record $128.3 billion last year. And the share of those dollars going to crypto funds is growing fast, from less than 0.5% in 2017 to nearly 7% last year. As quickly as VCs are handing out money, their own investors, the limited partners, are swooping in to refill their coffers. That, coupled with Han's proven ability to get in on the buzziest of crypto deals, bodes well for her. The fact that she's starting small and only focused on crypto, that could work in her favor too. Truly crypto-native funds are highly attractive for LPs, says Ilya Fushman, a partner at VC firm Kleiner Perkins. That's because these investors are able to attract exciting new founders. Han is seizing the moment. Already, her new venture has made 7 investments, including an undisclosed amount in Autograph, a Los Angeles-based startup that helps athletes and entertainers launch and market NFTs. Fushman's firm co-led the round. Both he and Han will serve on Autograph's board. Fun fact, the startup was also backed by Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback Tom Brady. But guess which other VC firm co-led the $170 million round? A16Z, with Dixon also joining the board. Hard as it may be to believe, there's usually a certain amount of tension in any divorce. Both parties insist Han's split from her former employer is amicable. She describes her time at A16Z as formative and fruitful. She credits the firm's founders for taking a chance on her. Not many people would have thought, oh, she'll make an excellent VC, says Han. But Han says her experience working with founders has shifted her perspective on what she wants. One of the things I learned in the last 4 years at the firm is I'm actually an entrepreneur, she says. When A16Z's third dedicated crypto fund was fully deployed last year, it was a natural moment to move on. Given that we were at this inflection point, it caused me to do a lot of soul searching, she says. It was time to go out on my own. It's pretty much that simple. Han points to a section of the patio where we're seated. That's where she and Dixon hashed out the details of her departure just last month, she says, discussing things like how many people she'd be allowed to take with her. One insider referred to these negotiations as horse trading sessions. Ultimately, it was agreed that Han would leave with 6 A16Zers, including Rachel Horowitz, her chief marketing officer, and her new firm's head of global policy, Tamika Tillman. It was also decided that A16Z would become an early investor in her new fund. Han's firm will undoubtedly compete with A16Z for some deals, but as an investor in her new venture, her former employer stands to benefit regardless of who wins. Beyond that arrangement, both Han and A16Z contend that they plan to continue partnering on deals like the one they just did with Autograph. We're in regular conversation about promising projects and teams in the space and remain on several boards together, Dixon said in a written statement to Fortune. So we'll continue to collaborate very closely. Dixon's reluctance, despite multiple requests to talk to me directly, is an indication of a divide between the A16Z strategy and the one Han has employed. As you might expect from a former prosecutor, a job that often entails attempting to use the press to your advantage in your case, Han has embraced the spotlight, doling out interviews and becoming a regular on the tech conference circuit. A16Z, meanwhile, has become chillier towards the media. Co-founder Mark Andreessen is notorious for blocking journalists on social media platforms, going so far as to start their own internal content operation, sidestepping reporters altogether. You know who else typically finds the press irritating? Celebrities. But that isn't stopping Mindy Kaling from summing up her first impression of Han to this reporter. She's a venture capitalist I would actually like to vacation with. Kaling, the actress, writer, producer, probably best known for her role in The Office, tells me via email. Kaling met Han at an LA dinner in the fall of last year, attended by a group of women in the entertainment world. One of the purposes of the gathering was for Han to share her knowledge of the crypto world with the group, some of whom were interested in dipping a toe into Web3. Gwyneth Paltrow, who has since announced an investment in Bitcoin miner TerraWolf, was also in attendance, according to a source familiar with the evening. One of the ways Han plans to distinguish herself from the competition is to focus on verticals, bringing on expert advisors for each. She tapped Jared Cohen, a former Google executive, and fellow former prosecutor William Frenzen, to represent technology and government policy, respectively. And when she needed an entertainment advisor, she called Kaling. "I think I said yes before she finished the question," says Kaling. "She's a legend in the crypto community, and who wouldn't want to be around that?" Han's plans also include some notable changes from the fund she co-ran at A16Z. "In contrast to the massive scale of that firm, we want to be nimble, so we're keeping our team kind of small," she says. And while A16Z is known for offering its portfolio companies a suite of services ranging from marketing to legal, Han says she plans to take a more targeted approach to building out what her firm does and doesn't do for founders. For Han, small and targeted isn't at odds with global. She says she plans to search for startups far from the typical hubs like Silicon Valley. "I think some of the best crypto founders are going to be found all over the globe," says Han. "So I do think that's one of the things my firm will do, is increasingly have this global focus." Then, of course, there's the name. So far, Han has labeled her new venture KRH for Catherine Rose Han. But the investor says it's just a placeholder for legal documents. "I don't want to rule anything out, but I don't believe I will name it after myself," Han tells me. "I'm building a franchise that I'm sure someday others will take over." It's hard to quantify Han's success as a VC. It's partly the nature of the job. Many bets don't pan out, and those that do typically take upwards of 10 years to exit, meaning go public or get acquired. Over the past 4 years, Han and A16Z's crypto team made more than 60 investments. Only one of them has had an exit so far. Coinbase, the cryptocurrency exchange platform that went public via direct listing with a valuation of nearly $100 billion last year. And while Coinbase was Han's first gig as a crypto insider, the startup asked her to join the board after she left the DOJ, A16Z actually made its initial investment in the company back in 2013, well before Han joined the firm. That said, the companies she's backed have seen ridiculous growth in valuation, which, until a startup exits, is probably the most commonly cited metric of success. OpenSea, for example, has become the dominant marketplace for NFTs, valued at $1.5 billion just last year. It's now worth more than $13 billion. As crypto expands globally, so do its challenges and controversies. Last year, China made waves when it banned cryptocurrencies, and other countries have restricted their use over fears that it could disrupt national control of existing monetary systems. And there's another concern brewing. Some digital currencies are notoriously energy intensive, leaving behind a mammoth carbon footprint. The issue was front and center at a U.S. House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee hearing on January 20th, where members of Congress debated how to make cryptocurrencies more environmentally friendly. "Regulatory compliance is the most important topic in crypto this year," says FTX Ventures. In addition to external threats, crypto's wildfire growth has also drawn its share of critics from the larger tech ecosystem. But despite her engagement with critics, Han says she has no qualms about crypto living up to its hype. "Yes, the infrastructure isn't quite there yet, but it's on its way. In the meantime," she says, "technology's potential has exploded." When she entered the investing field in 2018, the most people thought the only real area where crypto made sense was in financial applications, says Han. "What I've learned is that, wow, there's so many more use cases than we imagined." Meanwhile, there are more pressing concerns. In January, the midst of Han's fundraising push, the crypto market tanked in a crash that scrubbed $1.4 trillion in market value. The very structure of many crypto deals, including the ones Han says she'll do with her new firm, can be extraordinarily risky. Unlike traditional VC investments, which can take equity in exchange for cash, many crypto investors take so-called tokens as part of their sale. Essentially, digital securities stored on blockchains, these tokens face the same intense volatility as the broader cryptocurrency market. For Han, though, it's important to separate risk, which comes with the territory, from uncertainty, which isn't in her vocabulary. Like many things in my career, I think things are either a hell yes or no. When I joined Andreessen Horowitz, when I was offered a job, it was a hell yes. When I decided to spin it off, it was a hell yes. And many other moments in my legal career before that. And I've always been someone who followed my instincts, my gut instincts, and also just what my interests are. And this was really no different. Well, now I have moments in the last few weeks where I'm like, what am I doing? Yes, absolutely. And yet I'm super committed to it, and I know it was the right decision. Well, everyone, that is the end of our show. I hope you enjoyed it. You've been listening to Fortune on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Hanukkah Posse saying goodbye from Owl Radio.